Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports to Max, News Radio 830 WCCO, 708 The Time. As we take you down on this hot, steamy night, feels good in the city to me. Hope crime rates stay low and people are able to enjoy it outside. Get out there, dip your toe in the water, and remember that we only get so many days like this in Minnesota. So enjoy. Enjoy while you can. Trevor Mbakwe is an interesting guy, man. He grew up, played at St. Bernard's and Miami-Dade, the University of Minnesota. Had some NBA tryouts and then has been playing overseas for the last several years, including but not limited to this past year in Russia, which had to be an experience by itself. And he joins us now. Trevor, always good to talk to you and see you at the De La Salle League. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How you doing, Mike?
Good, good. Take me back. How do you end up playing in Russia this past year? How does that work for a player like you?
Well, actually, surprisingly, Russia is one of the top leagues in Europe. Yep. There's a lot of money out there, a lot of top teams out there, and it's a pretty solid league. A lot of former NBA players have played out there, and it's one of those teams that called it up, and I couldn't pass up the opportunity other than a beautiful city in St. Petersburg. So it was definitely a great experience for me and my family.
What is it like when you're living in St. Petersburg in Russia? What does it feel like? Does it feel like the U.S. at all? Does it feel like what?
Well, not many places in Europe feel like the U.S.
They're a lot older than we are.
Yeah, exactly. But actually, St. Petersburg is like it's one of probably the only city in Russia that's pretty, you know, European. So, like, you know, you go there, there's a lot of old buildings with a lot of history, a lot of things out there. So, I mean, the city was really beautiful. The weather was tough, but I'm from Minnesota, so I'm used to it. But it was definitely a good experience. I don't know if I would go back to Russia, but it was definitely a fun experience for myself just to be able to say I did it.
Is the weather comparable to Minnesota? Is it what?
Yeah, well, the winters are tough. So, like, in the winters, it's dark, so you only get, like, 3 or 4 hours of sunlight. But then in the summer, spring and summertime, they have, like, this thing called, white night. So, like, there's really, like, 20 hours of sunlight. So it'll be, like, 2 o'clock in the morning, and it'll look like it's, you know, the afternoon. So it's really crazy. So, like, it's, you know, it's really far out on both sides of the spectrum.
Well, that could disrupt the old sleeping pattern, huh?
Oh, yeah, exactly. So it took, adjusting to the jet lag this year was definitely tough. It took, like, over a month just because, you know, you wake up and you think it's 4 o'clock in the morning, but it's really 11 o'clock, 11 a.m.
Is it a place where you feel like, boy, I better not say anything anti-Putin because the KGB might be right around the corner listening? Does it feel like that?
Well, I definitely, me and my wife learned, you know, my wife's into politics, so we definitely learned after the first week to not actually ask any questions involving Putin, you know, because everybody, you know, they kind of stay to themselves. They don't want to say anything bad. So we learned that pretty quickly. But it was fun, especially, you know, with the whole Donald Trump thing and all that situation.
Yeah.
So
what was it like when the election was going down over there? Were people engaged in the U.S. election for president, or what were they like?
Well, like I said, I mean, they really don't speak a lot about politics. You know, we went anywhere else and, you know, people are all pretty open with it. But this year was definitely a lot different, especially with everywhere is different. You know, a lot of countries are paying attention to what was going on in the United States. So, they definitely don't like to talk too much when it comes to politics.
They know what they believe, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Trevor, as you've gone on this journey, where has been the most interesting place that you've lived and played?
The interesting part of Russia, I would say, but I've been fortunate to play in some great cities. You know, I was in Tel Aviv and Israel last year, and you know that's as close to America that you're going to get. You know, everybody speaks English, just like Germany. You know, Germany is very professional; everybody speaks English, so it's definitely easier to adjust to those, you know, countries like those.
And is Israel, do you feel the threat of terrorism or Palestine or any of that stuff when you're there?
No, actually, I mean, no, not really. A lot of people, you know, the way the media makes it seem, so if something happens, you know, it's blown up and, you know, everybody from back home will call and ask how things are going. But a lot of times, really, I do feel safer and, you know, some of those countries, and, you know, there's shootings every day. There's crazy things that are going on in the States all the time. So, but there hasn't been a place other than probably when I was in Istanbul that has really caused me to feel some type of threat.
Did you feel it in Istanbul?
Yeah, because there was actually a team that was, you know, that was I was interested in who were talking to me, but that same week there was like a bombing at the airport in Istanbul. My wife was like, no, there's no way we're going.
Okay,
there.
Cross that one off the list,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty quick. So, but I mean, yeah, I mean, this last year, obviously, Istanbul has had a lot of attacks and some things that went on there. But I mean, other than that, it is a great place and does get a bad reputation. But there, I mean, that's probably one of the main places there in Paris that have been, you know, one of the places that are up for that my wife's concerned about.
Now, what's changed since the last time we saw you is that you are married and have two children. Since the last time we saw you with the Golden Gophers. What's it like to bring them overseas and to travel with them?
It's great. My son is a little older. He's 9 now, so he has it's the hardest adjustment for him. You know, he's going to different schools and meeting new kids all the time. But, I mean, I think it's a great experience, you know, just to, you know, when we're done retired, to look back and to be able to experience that and know that we live in these mountain countries. And, you know, my son speaks 3 different languages right now at 9 years old. And,
does he really?
Yeah. So,
what does he speak?
He speaks German, Italian, and, you know, English.
I'll be darned. And has it been easy for him to learn those each stop, or what's it been like?
Yeah, they say that the best time to learn new languages and things like that is when he's younger, because you're able to, you know.
Before we get stubborn, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Before we think we know everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, the best time to retain information is when he's younger. So he's done a great job. And yeah, it's cool to see. You know, there's been times, especially in Germany, because German's a hard language, that there's times that we had to ask him to translate something for us because me and my wife didn't know what was going on. But it was definitely cool. My daughter was born in Israel, so her passport says, you know, born in Israel. So I think that's pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a great experience. It's been up and down. But I think when we're done playing, that we'll look back and be pretty excited about what we were able to accomplish.
What was the best team you played on?
Playing some good teams. Probably my team in Germany. We were able to win the National Cup, so we won the German League, and that was a big deal for us. And it was definitely it was a fun season 2 years ago.
And the players that you play with, are they a lot like what you played against in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I mean, there's players from all over. From that team, I just won a German team league. 3 of the guys just signed NBA contracts this season, so. It was really competitive. They had guys, you know, one of my teammates played at Kentucky, and I played with Aaron White, who played at Iowa this year, and I was with him in Russia. So, you know, a lot of these guys, we've all heard of each other, played against each other, grew up with each other. So it's pretty cool seeing us, you know, play against in different countries and have some type of success.
Well, you're a big, strong power forward. Do you have your way in the post with a lot of these guys, or are there a lot of guys built like you?
Yeah, I mean, it's all over, especially. I mean, Europeans is a great league, or basketball in Europe is a great league. You know, you can't just rely on your athleticism or how strong you are. Well, guys are smart. You're playing against, you know, kind of like NBA, you're playing against guys of all ages, guys who have been playing professionally since they were 13, 14 years old. And you have a lot of guys who play at the top level in college who have came over there or played in the NBA. So it's a high level of basketball. It's very competitive and it's fun.
Is it difficult to get contracts and whatnot and to have an agent that, I mean, is there a lot that you have to wade through to get the ruble converted and all those things? I mean, do you have to have one eye open all the time because you're afraid they might take you for a ride?
Well, I've been fortunate. I've been in some great situations with some great professional teams. So I've heard a lot of crazy stories, you know, team players not getting paid or, you know, having to get paid underneath the table and stuff like that. But I've been playing for some professional team, so I never really had to worry about, you know, if I'm going to get paid this month or what's going to happen. But yeah, I've been unfortunate, but I definitely have heard the stories over the years, and it's a lot. I mean, you find yourself in some countries and there's some teams who don't do it the right way, and you know, you have to take them to court, do things just to get, you know, some of your income that's due to you.
Sure. So does the money, do you have to have a bank account there? Do they just wire it to the U.S.? What do they do?
Both. I mean, it just depends on the team. Some teams, you know, they're able to wire it directly to your bank account in the States, and sometimes you have a local account just to make it easier if you want to use their currency or whatnot. But I guess it depends on the player, and it just depends on the team is how you want to split up how your income's given to you.
Boy, though, you've had quite an education, haven't you, over the last several years?
Yeah, I've been all over, so I feel it's definitely been very educational. I've learned a lot, and it's been a great ride.
Have you ever thought about quitting, or have you always wanted to fight through whatever came your way?
Yeah, I mean, you guys know I've been dealt with a lot of obstacles, a lot of ups and downs, but at the end of the day, I'm getting paid to travel the world and play basketball. So I mean, even at my roughest day, I'm still in a very fortunate situation. And so it's kind of hard to complain sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great attitude to have, though. You got to come back to appreciation. In other words, you can't say, well, I'm playing in Russia, but I wish I was in the NBA. That doesn't do any good. You can have the NBA dream. Enjoy the fact that you're getting paid, because a lot of guys you played with back at St. Bernard's and beyond, we all wanted that shot and didn't get, weren't good enough to get that shot.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, there's times, obviously, you have a bad game or, something's going on, you want to complain. But then you look at it and you say, hey, I'm in a very great situation. A lot of people trade places with me. So I think you kind of have to have that mentality if you want to survive in Europe, because the seasons are long. The 10-month season, you get a short summer, but our window to play basketball and to make money is so small in sports, so you just have to kind of take advantage of it. But, I mean, obviously, there's times I see some of the contracts that go in the NBA, role players who don't really do nothing. They're getting
$15 million
a year. So, obviously, I'm human, so I look at those guys and I'm like, geez.
You think I could do that, right?
Yeah.
I can be a good practice player and sit, because that's what a lot of them are doing. They're making millions,
Right. I do a lot more. I bring your towels and water bottles and anything.
Yeah, the money in the NBA is just crazy now. It's become so international. They've been able to tap into China and some different places and figure out a way to garner some of that money. So what do you do next year? How do you find the right fit for Trevor and Mbakwe? How do you go about that?
Basically, I mean, now that my son's older, so we try to get him cities that have international schools. That's usually one of the top questions, because, it's hard if you go into a different country for him if he's not able to speak with teachers or other kids who don't speak his language. So that's like usually, obviously salary is a big thing, but the second big thing is as far as like just the city and schooling and education and things like that.
Like, what league would you like to play in?
Whoever pays.
Yeah.
But Germany is really cool. Israel is nice. The weather in Israel, we live 5 minutes from the beach, and you go there and 70-80 degrees year round. So I mean, obviously weather wise, and everybody speaks English there. But just kind of like Germany, Israel, Italy was fun. But I'm not really picky. I'll go to any country for the most part, as long as the weather is decent and reasonable.
I always hear, and I don't know if this is true or not, that the big guys from the U.S. have the best chance to make the teams, because it's easier in the foreign countries to develop guards than it is big guys. So a guy like you, it works out well, because they're looking for guys like you because they don't develop as many of them. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, for guards, it's dime a dozen. You can go anywhere and find a good guard. So, I mean, I think the market's a little bit hard for that. We're in a period, too, with the small ball. So, I'm undersized. I've been undersized my whole career. So, I think I've kind of fit that mold right now with what's going on with the game. So it definitely makes things easier for me as far as getting jobs, because, teams, I'm able to defend other fives, and I could defend the guard and do things like that when we decide to go small. So that definitely is in my favor right now. But yeah, I mean, guards, like in Europe, there's so many good guards. Like Kiddos is probably the best European player. He just signed with the Clippers. And, he's going to be a big-time player.
Is he a point guard?
Yeah, he's like 6'4", 6'5", big point guard, has unbelievable
great. So he'll replace pass. Chris Paul, huh?
Yeah, he's replacing Chris Paul. So he's going to be – he signed today with the Clippers, and I think, he's going to be definitely a big-time player for them.
Oh, that's interesting. Trevor, what about Rodney Williams? What's he doing now?
Rodney, he was in D-League last year, or this previous
season. Was he?
Yeah, but he had an injury, so I think he's kind of recovered from that. I talked to him maybe a few months ago, and he's going through that, and he's kind of battled some injuries and some tough situations. But Rodney's great; he's still young, and he's going to get more opportunity.
Well, how do guys balance whether or not they want to go to the D League, now it's called the G League, versus playing overseas? What goes into that? Because the G League, you're obviously going to be closer to. The NBA is going to be watching you more, but you play for a lot less money. How do guys make that decision?
Everybody's different, If you're young, single, maybe my situation is different because I have a family. So, it's kind of hard to turn down guaranteed six figures somewhere to, you know, play in the middle of Maine or Iowa for $20,000. Yep. So, I mean, it's the thing. Everybody has a dream, and some guys, their dream, no matter what, is that they want to go the D-League route and do whatever they can. And if they have to sacrifice, you know, give up money, guaranteed money to live that dream, then that's their choice. But it's tough. I mean, you go to some situation in Europe, and, you know, it's different. You have to adjust to the culture, adjust to everything, the game, with the way it's played in Europe. And some guys, they just, you know, they can't cut it out or couldn't cut it. But I've had offers, obviously. I've had some invites to training camps and things like that. But at the end of the day, like, it's for me, it's hard to, you know, pass up guaranteed money to chase a dream that may or may not happen.
Yep, that's for sure. It's at De La Salle this summer, by the way, that the summer league where you see these guys play. And have you been playing yet? You were getting warmed up the other night, but you said you weren't quite ready to go.
Yeah, next week I'm back, so I'm excited to get out there and play the guys. Jamar Dixon has done a great job of bringing the pro-am back to the city. And, you know, we have guys like Tyus and local guys and the Gophers that back into it. So the fans have been great, and I'm looking forward to playing in it.
Well, are you is Errol Karlstrom going to be your coach again?
No, I'm with Kerry Sutherland. So I'm with
you got Kerry. Good, yeah.
So I'll be playing with Nate Mason and Amir Coffey. So
there's your three man. There's your trifecta there. Mason, yeah, Coffee on the wing, and you underneath, huh?
Yeah, I'm excited to play with those guys and you know, just keep building that relationship with them. And you know, I'm excited about this new Gophers team too. They have a lot of talent, and Coach Pitino is doing a great job of assembling the team.
Hey, yeah, you've seen some of those young guys play at the league. What do you think?
I'm excited. I think this last year it was good for them to get that taste of success. They have a lot of vets now. They bring in, you know, some good guards, some good players with Isaiah Washington, the other shooter they have, Jersey. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited.
Trevor, great to talk to you always. I look forward to seeing you over again this summer, but fun to stay in touch with you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Mike.
You bet. Trevor Mbakwe, former Gopher. Fun to watch these kids. They grow into men and they become, you know, in this case, a husband and a father. And, you know, he had a couple of bad bouts there when he was playing for the Gophers at Miami-Dade Community College. You see him kind of get that life straightened out and head in the right direction. A lot of positives and a lot of positivity and some good people around him like Kerry Sutherland that will help steer the ship in the right direction. Take a break. Come back. This is Sports to the Max. This is WCCO. Welcome back, Sports to the Max, News Radio 830 WCCO. Tink Larson is a legend down in Waseca, and he drove his motorcycle this summer at age 75. He still plays baseball. He's 75 years old. And almost lost his life. Spent too much time in the hospital. On the other side, we're going to visit with him about how life is after the accident. At 8 o'clock, it is our triathlon coming up, the Lifetime Fitness Annual Triathlon. We've got some people coming in the studio to explain to us the mindset of a triathlete. Could it be you? Stay with us on WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Currently 90 degrees. Dan Cook, I have a question for you. If somebody gave you all the money in the world and they said, you now own a baseball team, Major League Baseball team, and you got to build that baseball team any way that you want it, or as best you can, obviously. Everybody has limitations and chance. Would you build it around speed or power, given a choice?
I think given where the game's at today, you have to kind of – power has to be a central consideration. I mean, strikeout totals have skyrocketed. Home run totals have gone up. That's just sort of where the game is at. And I think trying to counter that by saying, okay, we're going to be a fast team instead of a powerful team is a pretty good way to get beat unless you've got dominant starting pitching.
But – could you not be the fly in the ointment if you went with speed because other teams are now so programmed to defending, you know, they got strikeout pitchers and they're geared to try to prevent the home run? Could you have a station-to-station team, I wonder, that would do some damage?
I really don't think so, especially not in this day and age of defensive shifts. I think you take a lot of station-to-station kind of stuff out of the mix with the way that teams are able to align themselves defensively, which I think is, again, plays into this power surge that we're seeing, that you know, you're better off. Everybody's obsessed with exit velocity and launch angle now, right? Those are the two hot new stats. But there's a reason for that. It's because it's what works at this point. You hit a lot of ground balls, that used to find holes in the infield before don't anymore.
Yeah, you're right. And then I had a long conversation with Gene Glynn about bunting. Mm-hmm. And you know, who are your best bunters and how do they become their best bunters? And he said the only way you can become a great bunter, because sometimes we see those shifts and stuff when mm-hmm. we say, boy, lay one down, you mm-hmm. know? And it was an interesting conversation. He said the only way that that you can become a great bunter is to bunt in games.
Yeah.
And so you can't develop – he said there's a lot of great practice bunters. Mm-hmm. Because it's pretty easy, you know, get the bat out there, blah, blah, blah. But he says you can never gain the confidence that you need by just bunting in practice. And so now you're talking about a major you have to leave your comfort zone, and you have to trust that you can bunt in a game. And most guys, he said, won't do that. I mean, it's just not in their nature. They haven't had to do it through the minor leagues, most of them. And I'll be damned if they're going to sacrifice the potential of a base hit and that average that they feel comfortable with for a bunt.
And that's why you see with defensive shifts where they'll leave one half of the infield seemingly wide open and say, if you want to try and drop down a bunt, you know, go for it. Because, A, we don't think you can get it down, and, B, even if you do, well, that's not a home run, and we'll take that result over the home run any day of the week.
Well, the other thing is you're not going to pitch them so they can't bunt it over there.
Oh, sure.
You know,
to a degree, yeah.
Try to bunt a slider off the handle.
Yeah, exactly.
Try to move it down to third baseline if you're a left-handed hitter. Good
exactly.
luck.
And it's, you know, it's become a lost art to a great degree in baseball and has been trending that way for a long time. And part of that's the shifting. Part of that's, you know, the nature of the game. Part of it is, you know, the advanced metrics now, right, is that teams don't value the sacrifice bunt the way that they used to. Outs are the most precious thing in baseball.
It's just funny how this stuff changes in trends, you know.
You just don't want to give those away unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah, for sure. And but the shift and the trend and the power mm-hmm. and the swing from the heels and everybody wanted a power hitter for a long time.
Yep.
Chris Carter hits 40-some home runs. Heck, he gets cut by the Yankees this year.
Yep.
You know, because he strikes out too much.
Exactly.
I mean, you're cutting power hitters. It used to be, hey, if you can hit 20 home runs, then you're set for life from their next contract, you know?
Yeah, not so much anymore.
All right. Take a break and think about what we've talked about on WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Just the other night, I said, who is Kimberly Williams' husband? And somebody said, really, Brad Paisley. And then I just saw an ad for Brad Paisley on TV, that he's coming here or something like that. Ironic or coincidence, Dan?
That would be a coincidence, Mike.
Okay. Yeah, because Pace was there.
Right.
But I didn't know who he was because he's country western. And I don't know a lot about country western. And so I am pretty sure, though, that he sings that one song, My Mama Dates Her Cousin and That's Okay With Me. I'm pretty sure that that's his big hit.
You're making so many people mad right now. Why would you do that?
You know, I ran into today. I like that. Do you like eating in a restaurant by yourself or not?
I don't do it very much, but I'm not opposed.
I don't mind it at all.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've got no problem going to a movie by myself. That's,
I don't have a trip. Yeah. I'm going anywhere by myself, no. I guess, but, yeah. I don't go to many movies period. So I guess
right.
I'd have to be the right place, the right time. There's a lot of people, and I don't mean this to sound sexist, but, it seems like females more than males don't want to sit in a restaurant by themselves. They think it looks strange or whatever. Or maybe they don't want some guy coming and sitting down and starting a conversation.
That's a huge part of it. They don't want to get hit on. And I think there's also a harsher societal judgment on women by themselves.
At least they feel that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't judge a woman sitting by herself.
I wouldn't either,
at a restaurant at all.
But I think they feel like that's out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's fair.
But I've always kind of enjoyed sitting in a restaurant by myself with a newspaper, you know?
Sure.
In fact, they just did it over at the hen house, and I did it at noon hour, too. And I got a newspaper. I got the phone if anybody needs me. It's a comfortable, calming place for me to be. But today, I didn't realize I was sitting right next to Johnny Lastman. Remember Big J when he was here?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Big J and his family were out.
Oh, cool.
And so I had an interesting conversation with him. It was fun to reconnect. So I got to tell you, pretty good poultry that I had on the plate.
At the hen house?
At the hen house, I went with the bison burger.
Oh, okay.
Then earlier today, I had the two egg special at the Good Earth Cafe out in, not Good Earth, whatever it is, off of Highway 100 and 394 there.
Good Day Cafe.
Good Day, you know it. Yeah,
yep,
that's a
I know where it is.
You know, how do you get people, to, that's a destination place because you got to work at it to get
there. Yeah, you do. You do have to know
where
you're
going to get
there.
And it's always full, you know?
Yep.
How do you get people? I guess you make good food, huh?
That's really the bottom line. But, I mean, there has to be some sort of word-of-mouth marketing going on, right? Because
people would die to have that bigger crowd that are sitting in the Mega Mall, you know?
Yeah, that are sitting in much better locations.
Yeah,
that one's tough to get
because you got to drive around and back and through and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's really strange where that because you can see it really easily from 394. I mean, it seems like it's right there. But trying to get at it, you got to, you know, was it Xenia and then around and behind the building?
You better know where you're going, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's right next to the Metropolitan.
Yes.
Which used to be Rupert's.
Right.
Oh, I mean to tell you, Dan.
Back in the day?
When it was Rupert's, you found Rupert's. You found Rupert's and didn't found you. Okay, that's all I'm saying. Take a break. Come back with Tink Larson. Stay with us. Tink Larson is a legend down at Waseca and a legend in the baseball community, and he worried us all quite a bit when he took a motorcycle and took a spill not that long ago that changed this summer. Tink, how many times have we told you not to ride your motorcycle? Are you there,
Mike,
Tink?
Are you there? Yeah, I evidently reception must not be good. I'll probably better go outside.
Okay, we'll kind of stand by here, and then you tell us when you got us. And, you know where Tink is? He's at a ballpark. Where else? He was at a ballpark earlier today. He's in committees. He has meetings. He has everything. Is he there, Dan?
Okay.
Oh, can you hear me, Tink?
Yes. Are we okay?
Yep. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay. It's a little loud. I'm at the Twins game here.
Okay. They're down 2-0. Doesn't look good right now.
Yeah, it doesn't look so good. The 2-run homer there.
Yeah.
I'm off to a bad start.
Yeah, I was talking
to. Looks like it hit the top of the fence.
I was talking to Gene Glynn about you earlier. You know, you coach Gene, of course. He's the third base coach for the Twins. And he told me that you promised not to ride a motorcycle again. Is that correct?
You know, Mike, got to find some place where this reception is better.
Okay. I'm in the
Skyline Suites. You'd think the reception would be okay.
Okay, let's give you one more minute, and Dan, you kind of stay with him there, and then you guys test it for a minute when you get back out. Yeah, you'd think in this day and age, downtown Minneapolis, there'd just be like 6,000 places to bounce the old signal off of and make it happen. Do we think we're back in business? Can you hear me okay, Tink?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, let's go. So I was talking to Gene Glynn, and he said that you promised you won't ride a motorcycle again. Will you promise us that?
I will promise you that. And if there's anybody out there that's interested in a nice Goldwing, Honda Goldwing 1500 that doesn't have a scratch on it, I'd be glad to sell it to them.
You got one in the garage, do you?
Well, the one that went down, it didn't get scratched up or anything.
Oh, man. Tell us about that. How are you feeling today?
Well, I'm feeling a lot better. I'm in a lot of pain all the time because of the 14 broken ribs and all the other broken bones I have. But I'm feeling much better than they said I would, so I think I'm doing great.
Are you able to get around okay?
Yes, I am, and it surprises everybody, including the doctors, because they said I probably wouldn't be walking around for a month or so. I'd have to be home and in the house all the time and have a caretaker. But, heck, I was walking when I left the hospital. So I'm doing much, much better, and I was close to not making it, so I'm just thankful to be alive and thankful to be here. So I don't worry too much about the pain.
For those people not familiar with the story, explain what happened, Tink.
Well, I was on my motorcycle, and I happened to hit some loose gravel on the highway going about 55, and it threw me off, and I landed on the pavement, and I landed on my back and my head, and if I wouldn't have had the helmet on, I would have had a crushed skull because they put 15 staples in my head, even with the very good helmet on that I had. But I broke my sternum. I broke my shoulder. I shattered my scapula. The big thing was that I had a collapsed lung, too, that was kind of touch and go for a while from what I understand now. And then I broke 14 ribs. And so, yeah. So all the doctors are surprised with all of that I'm up and around so fast and that I'm not in as much pain. So for some reason, the pain didn't get me like they said it would.
So who saw you? And were you conscious the whole time when they got you in an ambulance?
Yes, I was. In fact, there was somebody behind me, I guess. And, of course, I didn't see anybody. I was in just such pain, but I never did lose consciousness. And at first they put me in an ambulance, and then I heard them talking about my vitals and so forth not being very good. And they said, we got to get a helicopter here. And or air flight, I guess, or whatever they call it. And so it seemed like an eternity. We waited for the helicopter to get there, and of course, it finally got there and flew me into Mason City Hospital. And so anyway, it was not good.
So, were you able to talk to the people on the scene, or were you in shock, or were you? What were you?
Nope, I wasn't. I didn't get a concussion, surprisingly, and I didn't. I really wasn't seeing anybody because I was in such pain that I was kind of screaming a little bit all the time, and so I never really saw anybody in there because for some reason I must have been having my eyes closed thinking the pain wouldn't go away or something.
Sure.
But anyway, no, so I was conscious the whole time, and I could hear people talking about me and things like that. So yeah, it was kind of scary when I'd hear them say something, you know, that was,
oh my god, yeah,
that, when they'd say something about, hey, we gotta hurry up, and they'd say something about my vitals, and they said, we gotta get something back, you know, and so forth. And anyway, I tell you one thing, Mike, they put a chest tube in. That's the worst pain I've ever
really?
Felt in my life. Oh,
what was it? What is it designed to do? Drain the lung or what?
No, they gotta get because the lung is collapsed. They gotta get air into it. See.
Okay.
And so they drill they put a little hole in your chest, and then they take this tube that's about the size of your thumb, and it's like about a half an inch thick, and they start pushing it in and wiggling it, and then they keep doing that, and I'm screaming, and then finally when they get where they think they can get in between a rib or something, they jam it into you and twist it, and the pain was just unbelievable. And I told them the next day, I said, why didn't you put me out?
Yeah.
And they said, well, we couldn't do. He says, because you were just about gone as it was, and if we put you out, your system slows down even more, and you might stop, and we might not have got you back. I said, you mean I was that close to being dead? And he says, yes, you were.
Oh, my gosh.
So anyway, so that's why I say I'm glad to be here.
When did you know that you were okay, that when you woke up the next day, or when did you have an idea that you're going to make it?
Sometime that night, probably, I figured I was going to make it because I'd said something to him about, hey, I got a ball game in Red Wing tomorrow. I says, am I going to be out of here tonight? And they said, well, we don't know yet. And they were just stringing me along,
sure.
I think. And so, anyway, because I was in the intensive care unit for a while, a couple of days or something, whatever it was. And anyway, I really didn't think I was going to die in the first place. But afterwards, when they told me that I wasn't, you know, real good shape, then I realized that, hey, things were worse than what I thought they were. But
oh, boy. So anyway, maybe it doesn't do you any good to know, right?
Yeah, that's true. And that's probably why they don't let you know that things when they're happening.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so when was the first time you were able to attend a baseball game again?
Well, I tell you what, when I got home, I couldn't go for a while because I was under home health care or something like that.
Yeah.
So I had to be in the house, and I had, health care people coming in every day. And so I wasn't supposed to go anyplace the first week. But as soon as I got out of that thing after a week, then I was at the ballpark the next night. Yeah.
Oh, so, and what was that? What did that feel like to go back to the ballpark, your comfort zone?
Well, it's great after what the guy been through because I was in that hospital.
Oh, there's nothing like being at a ballpark, especially with his name, Tink Larson Field, right?
Well, I don't know about that. That isn't so important, but it was just great to be out in the fresh air and with the ball players and the other coaches and all that. So, yeah, it was great to get out.
And how are they coming with the grandstand down in Waseca?
Well, you know, they're making progress. Things got slowed down a little bit because we got some money from the legislature in the bonding bill, and that meant that we had to rebid everything because if you use state money, I guess, you have to use prevailing wages. And so, consequently, everything had to be rebid. And so they're supposed to go out this week, I think, or next week, and then hopefully back by the end of July. And actually, we're hoping the construction can get started at some point in August. And it won't be done completely this year, I don't think, unless things went really well. Because, but if it wouldn't have been for the delay, they had expected to be done before winter set in. But you know how it goes, Mike. I won't feel comfortable until I see that thing starting to go up.
Yeah, yeah. But the good news is you got in on the bonding bill, right?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Senator Jasinski from Faribault did a great job and was able to get it. And it was just a last-second deal that he was able to get it in because something else came out. And so then they asked him something about what he'd like done. And he said, well, I'd like to see that ballpark built in Waseca, that grandstand. And so so then he put in the money for $375,000, which kind of took us up close to where we needed to be to finish the fundraising efforts. And we still need some more. And we had cut out some things like fixing up the dugouts and scoreboard and so forth. So maybe we can get some of those things back in if we can continue to raise a little more money.
Are you happy with the way this is going to look?
Well, yes and no. It's probably going to look nice and be new and all that, and probably going to be real nice, but it's not going to be the same as the ballpark that was built in 1938 during the WPA days, and because there weren't many of those left in the state of Minnesota. So everybody that came there to a ball game from out of town was, well, they said they loved to come there to Waseca to see that old grandstand, you know. So we're going to miss that and all the memories that were made in the clubhouse underneath and things like that. So, you know, it'll be good and bad. The new one will be nicer because it's going to be, you know, handicap accessible, ADA compliant, all those types of things. We're going to have a walk-in plaza from the street, so make it very easy for the elderly and handicapped, you know. So there's going to be a lot of nice things about it compared to the old one. But, you know, we will miss the old grandstand.
You know, last time I saw you, unfortunately, Tink was at a funeral for Tiffany Rodning, and her son, of course, played. You coach at Minnesota State Mankato, and her son Brody played for Minnesota State Mankato. And wasn't it nice to see him get drafted in the 13th round by the Toronto Blue Jays?
Yes, it was very nice. And of course, you know, his mother. I'm sure she's smiling down at it because obviously she was a great baseball fan and she loved Brody and she had been looking forward to him getting drafted someday and playing professional baseball. So we're very happy for Brody and for Brian and for her looking down and seeing what had happened with that. So very nice.
And he's got that live left arm, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Obviously, he was an outstanding pitcher for us, and we hope he does well. And, you know, he's throwing 93 miles an hour as a left-hander, and, you know, the left-handers are always at a premium, and especially he's throwing that hard. So we wish him nothing but the best.
Tink, you're not thinking about playing down in Phoenix now this fall, are you?
Listen, I am going to play.
Come on.
I told the doctor that I'm playing on October 15th. We start in Arizona and then the following month going to Florida. He says, you won't be playing. I says, doctor, I've had people tell me that before on other things. And I says, I'll prove you wrong just like I proved them wrong. And he says, well, if you do, you call me because he says it'll be a miracle. And I says, okay, I'll be calling you because I'm going to be playing.
You're going to play,
I'm going to rehab. I'm going to rehab the heck out of this thing so that I can play, yes.
And you're a catcher. Are they going to let you catch?
Well, I'm hoping so.
Last year,
I know I caught like 7 or 8 days in a row, 9-inning games every day.
At age 74, huh?
Yeah, well, last year. I'll be 75 this year, so I expect to do it again.
Well, Tink, we're just happy you're still with us. Yeah, you're a credit to the game, and I cherish your friendship, and I appreciate you giving us some time tonight.
Well, I tell you what, Mike, you've always been a great friend of ours, and you do a great job with that radio station and TV and everything. You're a credit to the game and to the industry, and you are a big supporter of baseball. I know that, and we appreciate everything you do, and we appreciate your friendship, Mike.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good night.
You betcha. Thank you very much, and God bless.
You bet. The one and only Tink Larson. And, boy, oh, boy, that was some riveting stuff that he said about that accident. And what was that he said about me?
I'm sorry, Mike. I was getting your guest. I didn't hear that part.
All right. Take a break. Come back. Stay with us in WCCO. The time check is 7:53. That's the Wixon Jewelers time check. When you need a new... it's the Maplewood Toyota time check. In my life, in my professional life. And they think that from time to time I'm disheveled, that I'm like a step behind from being able to really orchestrate and implement the game plan. And there are nights when I get just a touch distracted. Part is that I have to produce this show too. I don't have any producer for the show. And so I'm constantly, like, we've got a guest coming in studio, and so Dan's getting them, and I want to make sure I know who the guest is and this and that. And it's just, it's amazing how much time it takes on the telephones every day and emails to get your guests lined up. So sometimes when I get in here, my focus gets just a tad sideways, even after doing this show for this many years. Because I'm always thinking about, okay, did I call that person? Did I text that person? Did I email them the right address? Those things go through your minds, when you do this show as a producer and host, because you kind of got to be the producer first and then the host. And over the last, I don't know, 6-7 months, I've been the producer of this show exclusively as well. And really for a lot of the years, but it tugs at you because you're always trying to think like a producer and then execute like a host. And so from time to time, my mind does go astray. That and the fact that we've got a window here, and look at those blondes sitting over there. No, just kidding. All right. Plenty more to come. Lifetime Fitness throwing their annual triathlon this Saturday. And Kevin Reed's in here. I mean, maybe he's participating. I don't know. Not this year? Okay. I'm going to have somebody in from here, so if you want to still sign up, if you think, oh, no, I can't because it's too late, I can pull a string or two for you, okay?
Thanks, Max. Appreciate it. Yep.
I do. I help my colleagues. You know, a lot of them laugh at me around here. Let me give you an example. Last week, I had some fun at Liz Collins' expense because I knew she was on the air over at Channel 4 when I was talking about her. Just good-natured fun. Liz and I are friends. She's like a sister to me over there, right? Thought nothing of it because I knew she didn't hear it, right, because she was on the air at the same time. Later that night, she says, hey, Darren Cook sent me the audio of what you said about me at 5 o'clock. Why are you people laughing at this?
Yeah, I did. I did that. I did do that. I just know that, you know, if my name gets mentioned on the air, I like to hear, you know, what the context was. So I assumed Liz would want to know that as well.
Oh, yeah.
And you two are such good friends.
Let me tell you something.
One of her good friends is talking about her. I thought she would want to know.
If I say anything about a pretty girl that they know, boom, they can't get to the texture soon enough. And I thought I was in safe ground, right? What I wanted to do was have people come up to Liz and say, and then her going, well, what did he say? And then not know for sure,
oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So you say something, you say it, you murky it up just enough so they're not sure if you're joking or not. And then you know that it will get back to them, and they'll hear like two or three different versions, and they're not sure which one to believe. That's when you got them. That's what being a friend is all about.
Is that really what it's being all about? I'm going to take some notes here.
Yeah, you just confuse them to the point, and they go, well, what did he say to me, you know? And instead, Dan, in this day and age, he just sends the whole audio file over there. So the context, the whole joke is gone, right? Now,
you could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.